Bert Wheeler, Reel 2. You were just describing those two forms of firing. One was a peacetime and one was a wartime. What was the difference between this?
The wartime, or the peacetime one, was more subdued. The wartime one, you had the angle of it. Not only the firing, but also bayonet practice. I don't think you've done bayonet practice in peacetime, which I understood anyway. But with the wartime, you had dummies, and well, you just had to have a plunge. We were told it was either your life or theirs. Make your own mind up. But luckily, I got home again.
Did you have to show aggression while you were charging with the bayonet? Was that part of the method of?
Yes, that was part of it. Very aggressive.
Did you have to scream or shout or?
Yeah, well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Did anybody have a problem showing the right amount of aggression?
I don't think so.
And at this stage, did you do any other training? Did you do any gas training? Did you train with gas at all?
Yes, we had the usual gas valve training with entry into the gas-filled room at once. I can't remember what gas it was now, but you had to go in with the gas mask on. You then had to take it out, stay in there 70 seconds and get out again. They say what the gas was, I can't remember.
What was the effect of taking the gas mask off?
Just watering eyes and nose, very bad taste. That was it.
And did you train with the Bren gun at all? The Bren gun?
Bren, yes. You had the usual Bren gun practice. Dismantling the gun and assembling it in 70 seconds. Hope you fired when you got it back again.
What did you think of the Bren gun? What did you think of the Bren gun?
Very noisy. Yes, very noisy. The other one, which I didn't like, was the anti-tank gun.
Is that the boy's anti-tank gun? The boy's anti-tank gun?
Yes.
Is it a rifle?
Like a rifle, we fire it from the shoulder. That was the... you only had to fire one round. Just as to say you knew it. And that, your issue with earplugs, which you had to wear, well, unfortunately, the earplug on my right ear fell out as I pulled the trigger. I got quite a lot of blast, and that's why I'm so deaf now.
Was there a bad recoil with the rifle?
That's very big, if you didn't hold it strong enough.
And did you train with grenades at that stage?
Yes. We all had grenade training. In fact, I think every infantry weapon at the time you had training in during the 13 weeks, which we were at Chichester. After that, your training still continued when you reached a battalion or when you were posted to a battalion. The training was intense, but not so harsh as on it. The depot was very harsh. The battalion, well, you settled in and everything was run smoothly.
Had you done route marches at that while you were training at the depot?
Yes. Very small route marches, actually, ending up with 8, 9, 10 miles.
And if you went 10 miles, would you be expected to cover that distance in a certain time?
No, not the onset. You're given a project to do, and effectively normal army pace of an infantryman, not. Not the light infantry. It's just an ordinary infantryman altogether. 3 miles an hour. I think it's 3 miles an hour.
And what type of PT did you do?
Very strenuous in the first 3 months. Everything. Everything in the gym, then, put it that way. Mats, horse, multi horse, wall bars. You name it. If it was in the gym, you had to do it.
And who were your instructors for that?
There are normal APTI people.
And did you feel over that period, did you feel you were getting physically stronger?
Yes. Actually, I was, like I am now, I was quite flabby, but they did reduce it. And I felt much better for it.
Did you feel that you could do things that you might not have been able to do beforehand?
That's right, yes. I never expected I could walk 10 miles before, but I did. Later on, so we walked 45 miles. But that was a slow increase. You gradually build up to it.
And had you done guard duties at that stage while you were doing your basic training? Had you done guard duties?
Any guard duties? Only at the barracks. Yes, the barracks. We used to do guard duties after. For about 6 weeks, you had to do your 2-on-4 off.
What's the 2-on-4 off?
2-on-4 off is 2 hours on guard, 4 hours sleeping or resting.
And would that be in the guardhouse, or would it be around the barracks?
Depends. I would say. There was one person at the guardhouse, outside the guardhouse, remained they were on patrol. You didn't have rifles on patrol, you had cudgels. And you just walked around with a cudgel.
Were you looking for anything in specifically?
Yes. Keep out of the way.
So, was there opportunity while you're on patrol to keep out of the way?
Yes. I would say you weren't caught. I wasn't caught, so I was lucky. But we just kept quiet.
And at the end of the training, were you allowed to go home at the end of your basic training on leave?
Yes. You're allowed a weekend pass, I think it's halfway through, 6 weeks. I think you had to do 6 weeks before you got a weekend pass, which was, I think it's a railway warrant as well.
So, did you go home for yours, your 6 weeks stage?
I went home, yes, I saw my parents. Girlfriend, which is the other wife. And Well, that was it.
And then, did you, you return back to your basic training at that stage?
That's right, yes. You went back, you got your pass on the Saturday morning, you had to be back Saturday night. 11 o'clock or something like that.
Was there any problems travelling home on the trains at that period?
No, no, not at the time. I'd say, I believe there were some delays after I got aboard, but I wasn't interested in that.
And at the end of your training at the Infantry Training Centre, you went on to a battalion.
That's right, yes.
Which battalion did you go to?
I went to the 4th Battalion Royal Scottish Regiment, which at that time were based at Tarras in Reading.
And when would that be? When did you join them?
I think it was just before Christmas, 41. Yes, November, December time, 41.
And what was the reception like when you got to your new unit?
Very good, yes. I was quite happy with that, because a couple of friends which I met at the depot were transferred with me to the same town, and we were put into the same company, which, you know, made things much easier, having friends, you know, entering into a new phase of life, and you take your own friends with you, and it's much easier.
Who were your specific pals?
Unfortunately, they're both dead. They were both killed.
Who were they?
One was Bernie Guilford, who was transferred to the West End with me. Another one was Mark Bert Overing, who stayed, or he went somewhere else after the television broke up, but we were at Chichester, rather at Reading. At that time, and we went abroad together to Egypt. But then the battalion was broken up in Egypt, and Bert Hesselin, he went one way, I don't know where he went, but he never came back. And Brother Guilford, he went with me, but he never came back.
And at that time, you said you had a good reception at the battalion.
Yes.
Were you getting used to being a soldier at that point?
I had been quite, you know, I was quite looking forward to it as being a soldier, but it didn't happen. They were quite reasonable, because they knew, in my opinion, that war's on and you've got to be together. And that's why they weren't too obstructive in their approaches.
And when you joined the unit, were you instructed in any of the regimental history of the unit?
No. Not to my knowledge. I think it was one or two information in passing, but there was nothing specific to my memory of giving you the lay down of the battalion or the regiment even.
And were you allocated to a company?
I was allocated to a company, but I can't remember which one.
Was it a rifle company?
Oh yes. It was a rifle company which I stayed with until, well, later in the year, in the war.
So, when you were based at Reading, what was your accommodation like at Reading?
barracks, wooden barracks, with beds, which were quite reasonable. Blankets, no jeans, just blankets.
What was it like during the winter?
Rather cold, but you did have coat boilers in every room, in every hut rather.
Was there somebody in charge of each hut?
Yes, the corporal, NCO in charge anyway, would be corporal sergeant. I think it was one platoon to another.
So you got quite close to people in your platoon?
That's right, yes.
Did you have any, what did you do, in your daily routine? Could you run me through a typical day when you got to the battalion at Reading?
The daily routine was just, practice. Route marches, ranges, bit of drill, not so much drill once you got to the battalion, although there was some, just keep you in trim, but there wasn't so much drill as it were at the depot. You used to get some mock battles with firing blanks, but well, you were quite happy for that.
How are these mock battles arranged?
The mock battles are in one company fighting another. If it was just a battalion, if it was a brigade one, it was one regiment fighting another. You go into the countryside, which is very pleasant to be in a country band, and well, you just done the best you could with it.
Would you have umpires? Would you have umpires who would tell you who would organise it and arrange it? Would you have an umpire who would arrange it? Would there be an officer in charge of arranging it?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you had the usual options, that you had the umpires, if you like. It was more like what they're in nowadays, what they call them, war paints. Quite gun battles with firing paint.
The war paint people, yes. So with that, did you feel that this training was going to be useful for you?
Yes. At the time, you know, you used to think, well, what the hell are we doing this for? But when you get into the real thing, it was a good practice.
So you felt that it was useful later in your active service?
Yes.
And was there anything that happened while you were at Reading? Any incidents that occurred?
Not really. The only thing we used to do there, quite mainly, was guarding crashed aircraft. That was one of our main. There was quite a lot in the Reading area, Reading, Oxford, were quite a number of airfields, and any plane crashes or shot down, anything like that. Whether it be our own or German, anything, we had to guard it until the RAF removed it.
Would people try and gather souvenirs from the aircraft?
Yeah, I would say they'd try and get souvenirs. But you just guarded it in normal time, three or four of you at a time, where it spread over quite a large area. He just kept the locals away, and that was it. Or the sightseers.
So, how long were you at Reading for?
Maybe about two or three months anyway.
So we're into early 1942 now.
That's right, yes, we're getting out of February 42, I think it was, we moved to Herne Bay on coastal events.
What did that entail?
Just watching for any action on the sea. If you saw anything you thought was happening, then you raise your alarm. But I didn't have any indication for that.
Were you in any fixed positions?
Yes. You had sandbag bunkers, which you just kept a visual eye on everything.
Did you ever see anything?
No. During the daytime, when there was no real watch, we had to go to Manston Aerodrome, snow clearing, just so to keep the it was manual snow clearing on the runways to keep the aircraft flying.
Was Manston a busy airfield at that time?
Manston was a very busy airfield for the Kent Coast Protection. Mainly fighters.
Was there ever any German attacks on the airfield while you were there?
No. We weren't there all that long. I think we were there a couple of months. We then moved to Caterham in Surrey. Which we were told then was our final training before overseas.
And with this final training, was there anything that was different in your training?
Nothing different from what we hadn't already done. Except the route marches got longer. The biggest route we'd done, I think, was 28 miles. Where we were inspected virtually halfway by Winston Churchill. And we knew then that it wouldn't be long before he said goodbye to England.
Did you know you were going to be inspected by him? Did you know you were going to be inspected by him halfway through?
No, we were marched from Caterham to Oxford, and we finished up in the chalk pit, where it was the whole battalion lined up, and then Churchill appears. he said he's got a word, and we carry on marching.
What did you think of Churchill?
At the time, I didn't think much of him. I don't really know why. I just can't pinpoint anything, but I didn't fancy him. It turned out that he was a very good Prime Minister, and also, head of the War Department. Yes, he did a very good job, immensely.
Did you ever listen to any of his speeches on the radio?
No. No, at the time, mobile radios were few and far between. Hardly done, actually. But I never, we never had a radio in the camp.
So you'd done this long route march, and you were based at Caterham. What happened next?
After Churchill's speech, We just carried on marching. We were down another 3 miles, 3-4 miles. Came to a halt. The usual 5 minute halt every hour. And we stopped outside the house in Tunbridge, in Tully. And this particular house happened to be my aunt, who came out with everything for me. She was quite surprised. But the last time I saw her before I went, I ruled. And from there, we finished the march and got back to Billitz. Billitz led not to Nottingham in Caterham. Old Billitz was a very nice couple. They looked after me very well. The meals you had with the army, but she was also the president of Billitz. We also gave the meals when you got home or when you got home. Which was quite good, really, if he wanted it.
And were you ready then to embark to go abroad?
From there, we were given a pep talk by the CEO. Everything was secret, according to him. But he said, you are going abroad. We were then issued with tropical kit.
What was that?
Which is a toupee, sand coloured shirts, shorts, Bombay bloomers, hose socks, and sand shoes. So we thought, well, we're going to the desert. Fair enough. We then, May the 26th, 1942, I remember the date aging well, because it was my wife's 21st birthday. And we were embarking at Caterham, Caterham Station, and unbeknown to me, she happened to come down to see me, which just at the time we were going to the station, so I was unable to talk to her, unfortunately, but I saw her, which was the last thing I saw of any of my family before we were killed.